Hi, listeners. It's Tucker Ligursky. As a researcher on Masters of Scale, I use the innovations of AI on a daily basis. And with an increasingly overcrowded market, it's hard to discern which ones are truly beneficial for my work, not to mention safe. That's where Grammarly comes in. My job requires me to prepare dozens of documents every day. And with Grammarly, I'm able to make my dossiers and research documents clear, more direct, and more concise. In fact, I recently discovered that Grammarly users spend 66% less time editing content, which is a huge advantage since our most precious resource is undoubtedly time. What I love about Grammarly is its commitment to responsible AI. My team works tirelessly to produce top-quality podcasts, and it's vital that we keep our data secure. Grammarly has been around for 14 years and has maintained a business model dedicated to never selling your data, which means you can trust it with your most sensitive information. Join me and over 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster and hit their goals while keeping their data secure. Visit Grammarly.com to learn more. That's Grammarly.com.
When I travel for work, I often find myself caught in a blur of meetings and hotel rooms, and I miss out on what the city I'm visiting can offer. I'm sure you can relate. That's exactly why I wanted to recommend a new podcast from our team that changes this paradigm. It's called Offsite Adventures. It turns a simple work trip into an unforgettable adventure. In each episode, we reveal hidden gems in the most iconic business travel destinations. Just search for Offsite Adventures in your favorite podcast player. The show is produced by the same team behind Masters of Scale and presented in alliance with Capital One Business.
Hi, everyone. It's Bob Safian. I'm here with a very special episode. At year end, it's natural to reflect on our experiences, what's changed, what we've learned. We want to be prepared for the year ahead and inspired to grab new opportunities. So, the team here at Masters of Scale has chosen 10 of our most unforgettable moments from 2022, from both our classic episodes with Reid Hoffman and Masters of Scale Rapid Response. These highlights illuminate key lessons about resilience and creativity and triumph. They're emotional at times and also fun. These 10 moments are more than a recap of the year gone by. They're a roadmap for the year ahead about how to manage uncertainty with grace and purpose to deliver impact no matter what comes. Sit back, listen in, and enjoy.
You got to have incredible talent at every position.
It's like this huge push.
There are fires burning when you're going home.
Can you believe it?
Such an idiot. And then you go back to, this is totally going to be amazing.
There are so many easy ways.
I'm supposed to know what to do. I have no idea what to do.
Sorry, we made a mistake.
But you have to time it right.
Oops.
Working at a three-bedroom apartment.
Stuff that just seems absolutely nutballs. 10 years later, I'm like, well, that's just how you do it.
We haven't made
just how you do it.
This is Masters of Scale.
I'm Bob Safian, and this is 10 Unforgettable Moments of 2022. Our first unforgettable moment of the year comes from Daymond John, founder of FUBU and one of the original sharks on ABC's Shark Tank. Daymond spoke with Reid Hoffman early in 2022 about the power of strategic partnerships. You can find a link to the episode and to all of the episodes you'll be hearing today in our show notes. In this highlight, Daymond shares a delightful and inspiring story from his early days as an entrepreneur. FUBU was a scrappy new streetwear brand run mostly by Daymond himself, and he was desperate to raise FUBU's profile. His effort is a lesson in creativity and perseverance. His unlikely plan? Get rapper LL Cool J to wear one of FUBU's shirts. Let's listen.
I remember going over to his house. And he was leaving. He's moving to LA because he's going to go shoot a show called In the House. I didn't know him that well, but I waited out there with my partners for about 4 or 5 hours.
Damon and his partners didn't have a pitch deck or a lengthy endorsement contract to sign. They had a t-shirt, and they wanted LL to put it on.
He came outside, and I asked him, could he wear the shirt and take a picture? And He said he couldn't because he was going on to a show and he had sponsorship opportunities from Nike and Adidas and all these people. And if he wore my shirt, he's going to have to turn down millions of dollars.
In hindsight, this was a perfectly good reason to say no. FUBU was small and totally unproven. But they were part of the same community, raised just a few blocks apart. So LL Cool J reconsidered.
He said that he saw me being a hardworking guy. He felt that he couldn't look at his customers, all the people that support him from the neighborhood, in the face if he didn't take this picture for me.
LL took the picture, and Damon sprang into action.
I spent every dime I had. I took out an ad in the Source magazine, the hip-hop bible at the time. Everybody saw that ad.
That ad would give FUBU the credibility and leverage to secure thousands of orders and make their first big-scale jump. And later, FUBU would give LL Cool J a piece of the company. It was a partnership that was both strategic and authentic.
Our next unforgettable moment is, if anything, more dramatic. It comes from an entrepreneur in Ukraine named Alona Misko. She's CEO of a Kyiv-based startup called Fuel Finance. Alona joined us on Rapid Response in April, just over a month after Russia invaded, at a time when many observers expected Ukraine to be overrun. She faced a chaotic and frightening situation, yet she was remarkably calm and even upbeat. Alona shared what it was like having to operate her business in a war zone, including being named Product of the Day on Product Hunt in the middle of a bombing raid. It's a story of resilience under fire, literally. Let's listen. We had a guest on recently who talked about people in Kyiv working in shelters with their laptops looking for Wi-Fi.
Yeah, we like still work like this. During the day, we have the siren, so we need to go to bomb shelters. But everyone in Ukraine trying to work now. And yes, people work in bomb shelters. And we are happy that in most bomb shelters we have Wi-Fi, so we can work. So it's like a little bit like normal life now. Because, yeah, we take our laptops, we go to bomb shelters, but okay, we still work. And the most craziest day when we decided to go to Product Hunt, because when we decided to launch something, especially on this day, we will have most number of sirens during the day. So usually it was like two or three before, but on this day we had 7 times per day the siren. So we should go to bomb shelter every time. So it was really crazy.
Was it scary? You're smiling. It's almost like it's now looking back, like it was an adventure. I guess it's an adventure if you're okay, but it sounds a little scary.
During the first 2 weeks, we were scary. But I think on the third week already, we understand, okay, what is going on? And after that, you try to live your life with new reality. We tried to smile, we tried to be positive because, first of all, I have the team, and when they see that we have like positive attitude and all executive team has positive attitude, it's more easier for others like do their job every day.
Our next unforgettable moment is about envisioning the future and making a sharp pivot to meet it. It comes from Natalie Massenet, founder of the luxury e-commerce site Net-a-Porter. Net-a-Porter was a pioneer of online retail when it was founded in 2000, and that was only one of the massive industry shifts that Natalie predicted. In this next story from her classic episode with Reed, Natalie recalls the moment she recognized that a second zeitgeist-level shift was coming to online shopping. Take note of the bravery required when challenging even your own team. Let's listen.
Women were trying to check out on their Blackberries. I came back to my team and I was like, people want to shop on their mobile phones.
To help realize this future pivot, Natalie found herself pushing against antibodies to change within her own team.
My own team, by this time, they were all sitting, you know, across from these big IMAX screens. designing on like fully immersive color 50-inch screens. And they're like, you know, no one's going to want to shop on their phone. Look at how beautiful this desktop experience is. And I was like, you guys sound just like the department stores. We disrupted department stores and shops. And people used to say to me, you're crazy. People want to go into stores. They want the experience. They want to touch things. So I was like, if consumers want to shop on their mobile phones, we should build for them the best mobile shopping experience that we can possibly do today. It's horrible and rudimentary, but it's going to get better.
This next moment is one from a recent conversation I had with Mauro Porcini on Rapid Response. He's the chief design officer at PepsiCo, and I actually haven't been able to stop thinking about it since. Mauro is recalling a moment early in his career when he'd just been hired by 3M and journeyed from Italy to 3M's headquarters in the U.S. Mauro thought he had full buy-in from the company to enact his vision, until one executive gave him a reality check. I don't want to spoil any surprises, so I'll let Mauro take it from here.
I was 27. They asked me to start in Europe. It was the consumer business. If it was not working, whatever. And I remember taking my suitcase and traveling to Minnesota from Italy and pitching this idea of design to this tech company in the middle of the Midwest. And I remember the first meeting to the R&D leaders and with the marketing leaders, and they loved it. I was so excited. I was like, yes, they get it. It's going to be easy. I was 27, full of enthusiasm. And I remember going to the office of the executive sponsor of this initiative. His name is Monosari. He was the EVP of the consumer business of the company, one of the most powerful person inside that organization back then. And I go to Mo and I tell him, look, Mo, it's amazing. Our design vision is appreciated by everybody. So he was there on the other side of this big desk. He looks at me and he's like, with a serious face, he says, they're all lying to you. I'm like, Mo, no. You are not in the room. I tell you, they are not lying to me. There was enthusiasm. And Mo looks at me again and is serious. Again, he repeats, I'm telling you that they are all lying to you. He told me, look, imagine you are in a gallery. Well, Mauro, you and design, you're one of the paintings, and the people are not buying you. They're buying all other paintings. I know because I gave them the money, and I know what paintings they're buying. They're buying the latest HR initiative or the new plant in Florida or whatever. They're not investing in design. That changed my life. That really helped me understand a major blind spot that I have. And after that, I developed a technique to understand who was with me and who was not with me. So the technique I developed is very simple. Every time I pitch something, I ask people a sort of sacrifice, a commitment. Most of the time I ask them money. Give me the money. You know, invest in people, in resources to run the projects.
Sometimes in business, conditions hit that you can't avoid, that disrupt everything you've planned. We saw plenty of that in 2022, from supply chains to lingering COVID issues to inflation and layoffs. So how do you handle it when your world turns upside down, when the threat is existential? Earlier this year, with the U.S. Supreme Court poised to overturn Roe v. Wade, I spoke with Alexis McGill Johnson, president and CEO of Planned Parenthood. And Alexis offered some truly unforgettable insights into how she was keeping her team energized and hopeful in a time of deep disappointment. When you talk about your team, like, you know, the conditions you face now can impact morale. I guess it can be hard to sort of keep spirits up when you're losing ground in some legal and regulatory areas. How do you keep your team, that human motivation side, positive in the organization? How do you keep your own spirits up and engaged when things aren't going your way?
My favorite quote by Alice Walker is a poem called Hope is a Woman Who Has Lost Her Fear. And I think about that a lot. I've meditated. It's sitting up on my wall right now because I think that's who we have to be right now. We have to be fearless. We have to be unapologetic. And we have to hold, I think, two really important things. We have to hold both the notion that we will be the leadership of Planned Parenthood when Roe is likely overturned or gutted irrevocably. So what does it mean to preside over some version of the end of Roe? How do you kind of address that from a heart space while you are fighting feverishly to do everything you can to leave it all on the field? And then how do you like create the container for people to process those feelings while also saying, you know what, but on the day after, we are also going to be in leadership when we are rethinking who do we want to be when we are no longer defending a law that, quite frankly, was not sufficient for the majority of our states. That was, as our reproductive justice colleagues say, was the floor, not the ceiling. Who do we want to be when we are not fighting over the privacy and burden and gestation and admitting privileges, all these things that have chipped away, but we are actually having a fundamental conversation around equality and freedom? And what does it look like? What does it look like in every school? What does it look like in every corporation? The hope that I'm trying to impart to my team right now to say, it is going to be dark. We are literally in the darkness. But on the other side, while we are processing that, like Sisyphus rolling the boulder up the hill in the piece by Camus, The Myth of Sisyphus, we have to imagine him happy, right? And I think that's the moment we are in, and that's the fire that I'm trying to bring into the team.
Hi, listeners. It's Masha Mokotonina, a producer on Masters of Scale. I spend a large part of my day carefully crafting emails, composing documents, and endlessly responding to messages. Which is why I am such a big fan of Grammarly, the secure AI writing partner I use on a daily basis. Whether it's reaching out to high-profile guests or coordinating logistics with the production team, I use Grammarly to adjust my writing to different audiences while maintaining the brand voice of Masters of Scale. Grammarly helps spot redundancies and clean up sentences that are unnecessarily wordy, verbose, long-winded, and repetitive. Like this one. Grammarly's AI prompts help guide my writing process, personalizing content based on context as well as making tone adjustments intuitively. It doesn't just help me generate more content, it helps me generate better content. Amazingly, Grammarly works seamlessly across my email, Slack, and over 500,000 apps and websites, so there is no cutting, pasting, or context switching needed. Join me and over 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster and hit their goals while keeping their data secure. Visit Grammarly.com to learn more. That's Grammarly.com.
We're back with 10 unforgettable moments from 2022. If you're enjoying this episode, you can share it with friends right now in your podcast app. And if you have your own favorite moments of 2022 from Masters of Scale, let us know, find us on social media, or send us a message at hello@mastersofscale.com. One aspect of 2022 that's been impossible to forget is the plunge crypto's taken in the past year. Well before the recent FTX implosion, Reid and I discussed crypto's future in our July edition of Need to Know. The lessons here are about dispassionately separating positive and negatives when emotion is running high. Let's jump in. So I want to ask you about the crypto world. We've seen heavy price corrections, some people calling it a crypto winter. You talked to me a while ago about the debate among Silicon Valley investors between AI and crypto, like what's going to be the defining tech of the next era. And in recent weeks, it seems like the market's like answered that question. It's not crypto. That for all the promise of Web3, like it's too early. Where do you sit on this? Did the hyperbole get ahead of practical application, or are we like overcorrecting on the fear side?
You know, it's funny because I listen to both sides. I got one side's like, well, it's all equities that have no value and backing that people are buying. And then the other side, which is this is the fundamental new platform that has been missing for how you evolve the internet, that it will touch a number of really key things. I go, well, actually, in fact, weirdly enough, since they seem in opposition, both are right. The crypto bulls are right because this is a fundamental new technology application. I do think it'll affect things like identity and payments and financial systems and art and creativity and everything else on the internet. And I think you already see some of it, even though the use cases are tiny and have yet to really grow. And then on the other hand, I'd say, but is the bulk of the speculation around these crypto tokens, do a bunch of them look like pump and dump sorts of schemes? Yep, a bunch of them do look that way. There's important values for the future of our financial society on both sides. And the real thing is reflecting what's really good about how we shape our society. And it's both, not one or the other. So therefore, that nuanced set of how you shape it is really important. So I'm still very bullish on crypto overall in the long term. I think that correcting kind of what the immediate value of these things is, I think is a good correction.
Our next highlight is from entrepreneur, politician, and author Stacey Abrams. In Stacey's episode with Reed, she shared a lesser-known chapter of her life, her time as a business owner, Stacey's story on working with a co-founder, and the lessons of leveraging their complementary skill sets was one of our most memorable of the year. Here's Stacey.
We went to Kotzebue, Alaska. And we're fly fishing. We're doing sheep fishing in a catch and release area in Kotzebue. It was cold. It was beautiful. I'm in the water. I'm casting fast and reeling it even faster.
That's Stacey Abrams. You probably know her as a leading voice in American politics. But the story she's telling is a window into her parallel life as an entrepreneur. In 2006, Stacey and her friend Laura Hodgson co-founded a small venture called Insomnia Consulting. Now, they found themselves north of the Arctic Circle, trying to win a new client. That would be the Alaska Native Corporation, or NANA, representing local indigenous communities.
Our guides are members of the Inupiat tribe that own the NANA Corporation. And so we're out there, and one of the gentlemen came up to me, and he was going to gently correct my casting. And I said, no, I know what I'm doing. My dad is an avid fisherman, so I know how to fish.
But her guide pointed out the obvious flaw in her argument.
He said, well, you're not catching any fish. I'm like, I don't want to catch the fish. It's cold in this water, and I just want to give it a requisite amount of time and then get out. But out of graciousness, because I am Southern, I caught 3 sheafish. I demonstrated my prowess with the rod and the reel. I released the fish, and I got out of the water. I'm back on the boat. I'm reading the book I want to read, and Laura is still in the water. And she is catching and releasing, and her sheafish count is, you know, rising by the moment. And they lean over and they said, she's really good. Is she going to stay out there all day? And I'm like, Laura's going to stay out there until you tell her to stop.
Despite the frigid temperatures, Stacey's co-founder was determined to be the queen of the sheafish.
I think that was one of those moments where in the cold of Alaska, I saw encapsulated who we are. I want to get the mission done, and Laura is relentless. We refer to ourselves as yes and but. She is yes, and I then go, but.
This fishing tale could be a modern fable of entrepreneurship. On the one hand, Laura, relentless pursuit of a goal and a willingness to stay in the icy river no matter what. On the other hand, Stacey, who said, get the job done fast, then get the heck back on the boat. When we tell the stories of successful founders, we often elevate that first way. We say, be competitive, tenacious, the last one in the water. But look closer. Stacey's approach is not just viable, but ruthlessly efficient. She knew her goal was to win the client, not catch the most fish. So she marshaled her resources where they mattered most. Both approaches are valid, and both Stacey and Laura would go on to become scale leaders. As yes and but, each would have a different challenge in front of them.
Our next unforgettable moment is about gratitude and about impact. With COVID-19 seemingly fading as a lethal threat in much of the world, it's easy to take for granted the incredible achievement of COVID vaccines. The next story is from someone who worked tirelessly to get those vaccines into the world, Moderna CEO Stéphane Bancel. Here, he shares with Reed the moment he learned that Moderna's mRNA vaccine trials were a success.
And then it was in November, the day before we announced the data publicly, was on a Sunday. We have an independent safety monitoring board met and reviewed the blinded data with placebo and so on. I was not at that meeting, but were informed after of 94% efficacy and so on, which was crazy. And we spent 2 minutes just with my team once we disconnected the other members, just to think, okay, what do we do and so on. And then I was at home, it was on a Sunday, and I called my wife and my girls and I just started crying and we had a big kind of family hug, everybody crying like little kids, you know, just, I was just so happy because what went through my head emotion-wise and so on was, yeah, we were going to be able to help a lot of people.
Yeah, no, and clearly. And then what was getting your own first dose like?
So it was surreal because in the 10 years before, I never thought, and I hope I will never need a Moderna product because we're working on cancer drug and drug for people with heart attacks and rare genetic disease, all very bad stuff. And what was very special is I went with my wife and the nurse were very nice because the nurse were vaccinated before us. And so we were super thankful when they realized I was a CEO and so on. And I started the company and everything. And so I said, do you mind if I got the shot at the same time as my wife? We moved the partition and so on to put the two chairs together. And we talking to each other. I took my wife's hand and we both literally on respective arms got our shot.
Not all of our favorite moments of the year had to do with recent history. In this next story from Bill Ford of Ford Motor Company, we're going back in time, though not all the way to 1903 when Bill's great-grandfather Henry Ford founded the company. Instead, we're digging into Bill's efforts over the last few decades, refounding parts of the organization that had become outdated. One of the most glaring examples is the River Rouge plant, or as Bill refers to it, the Rouge. Once a symbol of modern automation, the Rouge had fallen into disrepair, polluting the land and waterways surrounding it. Bill wanted to transform it into a model of environmentally responsible manufacturing. Here's how that happened.
Some things were very high tech, like we used the paint fumes, which are especially noxious. We captured them to power a fuel cell to power the plant. We used things that were very low tech, like we had Michigan State come in and they did a field of phytoremediation where they planted swales of grasses which would suck up all the heavy metals, and what would come out the other end is drinking quality water. Imagine that versus giant PVC tubes of junk that are dumped directly into the Detroit River and the fines we would have had to have paid to do that. And all this was a field of very attractive plants, about as low tech as you could get. Same thing with the parking lot. Instead of having sewers and everything puddle up, we just did permeable pavement. So everything just went right into the ground and there was no runoff and all the nasty things that goes with runoff. You know, and then we did, at the time, the world's largest green roof.
This green roof is by itself a feat of engineering. It covers 10.4 acres. That's about 8 NFL football fields. 13 different species of vegetation grow on the roof and create a habitat for nesting birds. Keeps the factory 10 degrees cooler in the summer and 10 degrees warmer in the winter. Its very existence created a foothold for the green roof industry in North America. But as Bill points out, Ford employees had skin in the game beyond making life better for local birds.
Most of everything we did was a cost save. It was also very important to humanize the place, not just make it green. So we opened it all up with natural light. Not surprisingly, our employee satisfaction went up dramatically working there. So absenteeism dropped and all the things that we worry about as employers got better. In the end, it was a huge success and other automakers came to study what we had done. Interestingly, just like they had done 100 years prior to study what my great-grandfather had done.
Finally, for our last moment, we want to share a highlight from the inaugural Masters of Scale Summit 2022, which for us was certainly one of the most unforgettable events of the year. I was joined on stage for a session on creating culture by Angela Ahrens of Apple and Burberry, Dara Khosrowshahi of Uber, and former Google CEO Eric Schmidt. This snippet has Angela and Dara comparing Angela's transformation efforts at Burberry and at Apple. While the tactics were different, what connects them is Angela's clarity and her passion.
I mean, Angela, you had to do a turnaround at Burberry and had some difficult kinds of conversations, not unlike Dara's talking about. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think like you said, you know, you pull everybody together. You got to be transparent. And you can tell by looking in the audience at your top 100 who's going to be on your team and who's aligned to your strategy and vision, and not mine, by the way, the one the team had put together. And funny, my first offsite at Burberry, literally, you know, 3 days in, and I looked out in the audience and I said, I can tell you right now who's not on board, and I am very happy to give you an incredible package, will be a great reference for you, but everybody needs to be 100% in or we're not going to win.
I'm curious as to what Eric said. For Uber, it was pretty clear as a turnaround. For coming into Apple from Burberry, it wasn't, did you have to state whether this was a turnaround or keep going the way you're going, et cetera? Did you have to put that down?
Yeah, no. I said the opposite. Okay. I said, again, the most successful retailer on the planet, 5 times the productivity of any of its closest peers. And so, no, I had to honor and respect what was built and say, might sound odd, but I don't know what to do. So together, you know, you're on the front line, and that's why we're going to put all these communications in place so you can tell us and you can problem solve. And so almost the opposite. And I said, I know there's things we can do better inside of the store. So what are those? And I know that, well, we actually did a huge crowdsourcing exercise with, and the teams kept growing as we were rolling out more stores. And we said, in order to inform the new in-store experience, we asked them over the course of 6 months, what did they feel Apple should be doing more of in their community? And that's when that informed the whole experience. But it involved them. So then when you launched it, I mean, you could ramp up to, you know, 20, 30,000 sessions a week, and they owned it because they were part of creating it.
There you have it, our 10 most unforgettable moments of the year. We hope you've enjoyed them and that they've helped remind you of your own milestones and achievements. Enjoy the holidays, and from all of us at Masters of Scale, we wish you a safe and happy new year. Thanks for listening.
Masters of Scale is a Wait What original. Our executive producers are June Cohen, Darren Triff, and Jordan McLeod. Our head of content and production is Lori Hoffman. Our producers are Adam Skuse, Catherine Clark-Bray, Alex Morris, Tucker Ligursky, and Chris Gauthier. Our editor-at-large is Bob Safian. Our music director is Ryan Holiday. Original music and sound design by Eduardo Rivera. Audio editing by Keith J. Nelson, Stephen Davies, Andrew Nolt, and Brad Worrell. Mixing and mastering by Baron Bastinelli. Special thanks to Chris Ye, Elisa Schreiber, Aria Finger, Saida Sapieva, Greg Beato, Adam Heiner, Alfonso Bravo, Colin Howarth, Willem Crowells, Tim Cronin, Kelsey Capitano, Samuel Puta, Anna Pisano, Sarah Tarter, Leah Cermedes, Charlie Meneses, Chineme Azequena, Emily McManus, Hallie Bondi, and Sierra Black. Become a member of Masters of Scale to get access to a year's worth of courses and content on the Masters of Scale Courses app. Find out more at mastersofscale.com/membership.
Hi, listeners. It's Anya Profumo, a producer on Masters of Scale. Scaling your business is no easy task, especially when it's so important to really nail the small details. Like, how do I write an email that gets my point across? How do I easily convey complex information? Or more importantly, how do I manage my reputation? All of these skills are crucial to taking your business to the next level, but you're not alone in asking these questions. Every week on Think Fast, Talk Smart, join Matt Abrams, a lecturer in strategic communication at Stanford Graduate School of Business, as he sits down with experts in the field to discuss these real-world challenges. So head to your podcast player and search for Think Fast, Talk Smart for the best tools, techniques, and best practices to help you communicate more effectively.